Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Welcome to part 2 of the weekend podcast, in which we're talking about unconscious bias training and why it's junk. So, so I'm joined by Josh. Josh was explaining to me how this all works. So if you want to carry on, we're going to go into its comparison to other tests in psychological field.
I'm going to talk about briefly what the actual test they use is first, of course, which is known as the implicit association test. And this existed long before actual unconscious bias training, and it was just an attempt by a collaboration of scientists. His name is Anthony Greenwald, and he also worked with someone called Debbie McGee and Jordan Schwartz, and they released this test in 1998, which is relatively modern by kind of psychological standards, because generally speaking, these tests take years and years of refinement, as I'll get onto later. But essentially, the test is predicated on evidence that past experiences influence future behavior in ways that are not always available to your own introspection. And they wanted to be able to measure this empirically and with kind of facts and data. And they were interested in things such as attitudes, self-esteem, stereotypes, and it was a purely scientific endeavor, just seeking to understand how our unconscious mind actually works. And the science here, although I'll kind of get onto where it becomes questionable, the intentions I feel are noble, and it's not the fault of the scientists that developed this that it has been misused and misunderstood.
It's activists who want to use it for certain things.
Yeah, I mean, I used a variety of unconscious tests that were very similar to this one, and I'll get onto why in a second. They're actually very difficult to use because, of course, the time it takes for something to be processed unconsciously or consciously, it's only, you know, a few milliseconds. I seem to remember it's between 200 and 500 milliseconds is kind of the sweet spot for testing the unconscious mind. So that's the kind of reactions you want. And I'll just get on to the procedure of the implicit association test, because it's quite interesting to actually look at the underlying science of it, because the way that it's used in these training sessions kind of devalues the rationale behind it. And I don't want people to think that researching the unconscious with similar methods is necessarily a bad thing, because I think there is some kind of basis behind the rationale for creating this test. And so essentially what they do is they have people sat in front of a computer screen, and they have a word in the top left and the top right, and they've got to associate the word in the center by pressing a key on the keyboard with either one. So the
word in the center might be good, and then you have, I don't know, cat and dog, and you have
that's actually a pretty good example. The first example I have is from the actual unconscious bias testing implicit association test, where they have black in one corner, white in the other, and then perhaps a name to categorize. So in the actual first and second stage of the actual test procedure, you're just practicing grouping these words in two different categories. So for example, the first stage it might be black and white, and then the second stage it might be pleasant and unpleasant, and that's what you're categorizing. And I think that's just to familiarize people with the pace at which you've got to respond, because it's within that very small window of milliseconds. And some people will definitely struggle with that. And I know particularly when I've done these kinds of tests, they're really boring, because you're just pressing buttons in response to words coming up. It's very difficult to concentrate to a point where you can respond quick enough where this window is being measured, which I think is part of the reason why it doesn't translate so much into real world behavioral change, because it's very difficult to respond to things very, very quickly and instinctually.
Just, when they're very boring.
Yeah. Because you're just pressing buttons in response to a screen. And if you imagine you're already kind of in contempt of the whole reason for being there, you're not going to put in the effort to do it in the first place. You're not going to really concentrate and force yourself to respond in this very kind of reflexive manner. But anyway, the actual training phase with the first two stages and the categorization kind of primes you for the part where they collect data in the third stage, where you categorize words into a combination of the previous two categories. So they'll have perhaps black, pleasant, white, unpleasant, and then the series of words that you've got to group between the two. And this is where they measure your reaction time. And if you're quicker to group certain words in certain categories than the other, then it's safe to say that you've got some form of bias, according to this.
Right, okay. But I can instantly see a problem there, like, because you're using the term black and white, and I assume the people, the activists using this, will say that's evidence of white and black races. So the individual is, you know, racializing those terms. But that doesn't necessarily hold true, because I mean those could mean different things. If you're just thinking of the color, for example,
sure,
in, like the color palette of you know, so not like this isn't white, for example, we're talking about pure white and pure black. Well, then that sort of shows a problem here, that if the researcher interprets a word a certain way, the subject may not agree. So if they're saying you've got an implicit bias against this, and then interpreting that as something else,
that's a good point. Because,
but if I'm just interpreting it as, you know, day or night in response, well, that's not what he's thinking, is it?
There's a weird distinction between it's measuring your subjective bias, but at the same time, it's expecting you to have an objective understanding of the categories, and it's a very unusual combination.
I don't even know if that's possible. Like, how would you even make a system like that that would work? Because, I mean, you'd have to explain all of the categories beforehand, I guess. But I'm imagining they don't do that.
I'm sure they kind of introduce it and explain it, but
I explain the method. I mean, explain every individual term and be like, "This is our definition of white. This is our definition of black."
Oh no, that would just be too tedious, I imagine.
Yeah.
I think it's presumed that people know what they're talking about, and I mean, it's on.
Well, that's your mind reading, you know.
Yeah, but you can kind of presume that there's going to be some degree of variance with what people understand these categories to mean, and that might lead to these weird effects where you can't actually replicate any of the findings that they claim to have found.
I mean, I did see one source. I don't know if you've got it, but it was a study done where they basically asked the people if they were racist, if they had biases against certain races, and they then took the implicit bias training on these folks. And the racists were not picked up by the test, because it was just not able to pick them up, because it was not using the same terms as they understood them. So that's,
I haven't
that's
heard
what I mean
the
by
the term focused side of things, but if someone is like explicitly racist, that's not their unconscious mind; that's their conscious. So it's not going to show up
as well. Yeah,
it's not going to show up on.
It's not even what you're measuring.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to find the racists here, you're not going to find them, because they're not unconsciously racist. They are actually racist.
And there's also the kind of theoretical problem of human beings naturally are inclined to have an in-group out-group bias. So you might be able to discover that in these unconscious bias training tests, but there's no guarantee that people act on this. People are aware, you know, even, you know, non-psychologists are perfectly aware that people prefer people who are more similar to them. I mean, it's so obvious to the point where it seems silly to say it.
Yeah. But even with that said, the evidence you had was that it still isn't very good at detecting that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it's a very blunt tool. And essentially, the test repeats where there are more practice sessions and then you have more assessments. But the procedure is more or less the same, where you have these different words, you have to make associations, and they measure the reaction time. And you repeat this lots of times, so supposedly it has more validity. That's generally the rationale behind it, where you have these kinds of tests where it's all reaction time. You need more repetitions to make sure that what you're measuring is actually what you're seeking to, rather than just a weird slice of people getting used to doing the test. And I'd like to get onto something called the internal validity of this measure, and also the replicability of the results. So in psychology, generally speaking, we look for something known as an inter-rate reliability kind of figure, which is essentially the test-retest correlation. So if someone takes a test once and then takes it again, the correlation between the two things. And generally speaking, we want a 0.7 or a 70% correlation to kind of consider something relatively reliable. And
so you run the test again on the same guy and you get the same results. You know, how often does that happen? And 70% is considered reliable.
Yeah. So you essentially compare one test set of test results with another from the same person, perhaps even at the same sort of time. And then you just correlate them and see how much they're related to one another. Okay. So
what does this test get?
I'll get onto that in a second. I just want to explain a bit more. But if a test is to be considered as measuring something that is tangible and real, obviously there's not going to be much difference between the first test and the second test, because they're going to be highly correlated. Like, because nothing's changed.
We're looking for racism here, so if you're racist in the morning, you'll be racist in the evening, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But generally speaking, the 0.7 is the cutoff, although generally it's preferred to be 0.8 or 80%. However, studies have found that at least the racial bias version of the implicit association tests have a test-retest reliability score of only 0.44 or 44%. So that's almost half the desirable amount.
So I take the test, and then I take the test 2 hours later. There's only a 44% chance that it's even going to be
similar.
Yeah,
on average, yeah. So
that's terrible.
I don't understand how anyone can predicate anything, you know, reliable upon this, because there's no evidence-based assumptions here, because you're looking at something that you can't even take it twice and get even half of the correlation that you would.
So like, I'm not racist, and then I eat my lunch, and then I am racist. Like, that's what you end up with.
Well, I did something similar to this while I was at university. I took an implicit association test, then I ate an orange, and then I took it again, and supposedly in the act of eating that orange, I became less racist.
Okay.
I don't know how that works.
The absurdity of this test, in which you can get nonsense results.
I would like to point out it wasn't actually very high. Just to clear that up.
I mean, these things don't work.
No, they don't. The point is that it's silly in the first place. Mm. These things don't have internal validity.
They're kind of worse than flipping a coin. 44%.
And of course, this is compounded by the fact that even if you do find bias, there's no evidence to suggest that it manifests in real-world behaviour. Hmm. And there's also no evidence to suggest that even the minor changes that they do have in this training have long-term effects. And to really have any long-term effects, you've got to follow up with repeated training sessions to the point where it just gets ridiculous.
How often do you have to do it out of interest?
Well, some places did it weekly, but there's no evidence to suggest how many weeks do you need to continue this until you need to stop.
So it reminds me of certain socialist countries where they have sessions after work you're meant to go to for an hour every day, and then you learn about theory and socialist economy and all this, and therefore it keeps you in line with the doctrine, and therefore you will be more complicit with the ideology.
Where do they do that? I've not heard about
certain East Asian countries.
Oh, right. Of course. I could have guessed. So based on this evidence, the actual creators of the implicit association test have disavowed its use, basically, which is quite funny. So they've basically said...
So they made this thing, and then some activists have run with it, and they're like, wait, no.
Yeah, they're like that. It's not in the spirit of what we are intending. It's being used in a manner which assumes it's far more reliable than it really is. And basically they were saying, we don't approve of doing this. Please stop. You're making us look bad.
It actually kind of reminds me, I don't know if you've seen, you know those little paper things you used to get in school? You're like, you know, one, two, three. And then you'd pull it up and that's your fortune. Like, there's a South Park episode where the girls make one, and then the boys, like, run away with this, thinking it's actually a fortune teller. And then they take it, and they take it super seriously, and they're trying to find out what their fortunes are going to be. And then the girls turn up like, what are you doing? Like,
it's basically exactly the same thing. And it's obviously completely ridiculous, because it's the scientific community has created something, and activists have just taken it as gospel. And
we can measure the racist feton levels, and the scientists are just like, what? No.
It is essentially like that, just with slightly more scientific basis.
Yeah.
But it's comparable. It. Yeah. It's still, you know, comparable, though. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how poor the actual conclusions they make are based on the evidence. Like, it's unparalleled in most psychological tests, as I'm going to go on to now. So there are two kind of prime examples of really good psychological tests. The first is one that everyone's heard of, the IQ test. So you can take the IQ test, and at the very least you can expect your results, if you do a test and then another test, to be at least 90% correlated with one another.
So it works.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
And I did this, and I did an IQ test over Christmas, actually, just out of my own curiosity, and I got the exact same score twice. So it seems to work, at least from my anecdotal evidence.
What was your results?
I got 120.
I have no idea what that means.
So,
is that good or bad?
That's good.
Okay.
Like, the average, like, the median figure is 100, so... That's quite a high score, thankfully. Yeah. I'm pleased to find that out, but I mean...
But this is an example of a test that actually works. You can measure... I mean, they don't say it's measuring intelligence, but it, like, cognitive ability or whatever.
Yeah.
Because people who get very low scores are literally classed as mentally retarded.
So that is actually a medical term as well.
Yeah, I think it's under 60 or something like that.
It's 70 is the cutoff, yeah. Okay. But essentially, although the test is reliable, and there's a test-retest reliability that's very high, there's still some debate about what intelligence is. And you don't necessarily need to have a theory underlying it necessarily. No. It's the fact that the statistics bear out that it's a reliable test is enough to show that it's testing something tangible.
Yeah.
So you don't actually need to know what it's testing per se, as long as it's statistically... reliable. And I would like to go into the Big Five personality inventory in a bit more detail, because this is another really good kind of psychological test where there's a high rate of reliability. In many cases it's 0.98 or higher, so 98% correlation. And if we could have a look at this image here, this is my results 2 years apart. And in the year in between, I did a master's degree. So this
is the effects of a master's degree.
Yeah. But you can see that in extroversion, it only changed 1% over the course of 2 years. So it's suggesting that it didn't really change. It's a fixed trait. And
your agreeableness went down quite considerably, I'd say.
Yeah,
I suppose doing a master's degree would do that. Like, getting sick of people.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I had to hang around with sociologists and...
Fair enough, then.
It'll do that to anyone. But no, there is a good reason for why these results have kind of come about. So you notice that the conscientiousness has gone up by about 14%, which is unsurprising considering you've got to really focus on being efficient with your time. And
what is conscientiousness?
It's like your ability to be orderly and get stuff done.
Okay.
So,
doing a master's degree probably would make you more orderly and rounded in life.
And conscientiousness is very predictive of conservatism, actually. And
oh, really?
Yeah, so you can find a good correlation between...
That does make sense. Like, I don't know, whenever I hang out at like left-wing protests or stuff, there's no orderliness, like you can tell.
Well,
these people's lives.
Openness or openness to experiences, its full name, is highly correlated with kind of being liberal or left-wing. Mm. And don't be alarmed by the fact I got 100%.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Like, it's liberal and left-wing, so
yeah.
Liberal also is just like, I will accept your ideas.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, but you can also see that it only changed by 1%. So over 2 years...
So these are the kind of tests that do work. So
yeah.
Because I just want to think, like, for the ethics part of this, like, could you imagine if every job you ever went for in the UK, they were mandated or basically mandated to run this test on you to determine whether or not you were a good fit for their company?
Well...
I mean, be pretty Orwellian. Like, we're going to test you and then... We're going to tell you what your mind says about you.
To play devil's advocate here, isn't a job interview the very same thing, but in an informal sense? They're getting a measure of your personality, aren't they?
Perhaps, but I hate this like scientific way of looking at a person where we're just going to cut you down to the pure numbers in the same way the like Chinese social credit system does. Like, they would probably argue this works and we're able to measure if a citizen's a good citizen and blah, blah, blah. But I just don't care. Like, I'm just not interested in running society in pure numbers.
I agree. It's an unethical thing to do because you should be judging people purely based on whether they're fit for the job or not. And most of the time, people with different personality kind of factors can be just as effective. It's just down to how people conduct themselves.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily pertinent, but the tendency would be for people who don't understand the underlying science behind it, people would weigh these tests too heavily. For example, they would say, I'm only going to hire someone whose conscientiousness is above 75%, whereas that might not be the best thing
for the
job.
Well, that means you've just excluded 75% of the population.
Exactly. So. And
but I mean, they may have, you know, a good argument for it, but I just, you know, this would make my company work better. But I don't think that's a desirable place for the world to be.
No, absolutely not. And there is also an argument to be had to say that if people have a personality trait that you might not be looking for, you've already selected employees that do have these traits, perhaps at first, and perhaps getting someone who thinks differently would actually be good for your company, because then they might be able to solve problems in a way that is different to everyone else.
Yeah, it would encourage groupthink, wouldn't it? Get everyone who's basically the same.
If you started hiring based on, you know, having everyone with the same personality, it would be very strange, and it would probably have a very unusual atmosphere as a workplace if everyone was exactly the same.
Yeah.
But I'd like to explain why this test in particular is very good, because it was a collective effort over essentially 30 years of, I think it was 5 different groups of researchers doing independent research and refining things with kind of statistical testing of these different questions to try and target specific personality traits. Like, they didn't know there were 5 traits, they didn't know what the traits were, but they've slowly refined it over the years, and although each of them used perhaps different terms, they roughly had the same amount of personality traits. Some did have 6, some had 4, but more or less they were the same. And the variance between kind of 4 and 6, it was more that they'd combined or expanded certain categories rather than finding something completely different. So what they did was, once they'd independently come to these conclusions, they kind of pulled their resources and developed the Big 5 personality test.
Well, you know, solid scientific method there.
Yeah, as opposed to 3 people devising a test in 1 year.
And then a bunch of people running off with it and saying, this means something else.
Exactly.
And if it's even been denounced by the scientists who made it, like, you know, you guys are using it wrong, well, then, I you know, don't put this in your company. Bin this. Tell the person who, you know, brought up bringing this into the company and fire them. They're wasting your time.
I would wholeheartedly agree, because if anyone suggests doing this, they clearly haven't looked at the actual evidence. It's purely for political reasons, I think. And there's no...
And even then, it's not going to help them, because it doesn't work.
Sure. So no credible scientist would ever recommend doing this training, because it has negative effects. It's based on, you know, faulty assumptions, faulty kind of conceptions of what the unconscious mind is and how we can affect it.
You want to achieve the goals you want.
Exactly.
The method it was, you know, the method to make the thing wasn't any good either. So
yeah. So
actual garbage.
I think I would wholeheartedly disavow unconscious bias training.
So is that where we're going to cut it?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.